The nominations for Artisan Local Drink of the Year are Apple Juice, New Creation Farm, Nether Hayford, Booze Hound from Gundog Ales, Harrington Slow Gin from Warner Edwards Distillery, Poachers from the Vale of Welton Cider, and Wild West Ale from Nobby's Brewery in Gillsborough. All sorts of wonderful things there, including Artisan Local Savory Product of the Year. A whole to actually put some flesh on the bones, no pun intended, of this, the North Ants Annual Food and Drink Awards, including Chef of the Year James Ingram, Harvey Lockwood, David Sims, Carl Long and John Tipson, all up for this. It's William Sitwell. How are you, William?
Yeah, very well. Very excited about tonight's awards. Good to talk to you about it. And when you say no pun intended, come on, you intend these puns. You don't fool anyone.
Oh, all right. Okay, fair enough. Yeah, it's been revealed, you know. It's okay. Scripted and crafted on the whole basis. Yeah, I can say
have
no
you
more.
Been have you been schmoozing with Ed Miliband?
No. Sorry, that sort of sent a frisson of sort of, you know, concern down my sort of spinal compartment. But, no.
No, you compare your the sound of your voice to the sound of his voice yesterday in the House of Commons.
Ah, yeah. Well, yeah. Is it Alex Lefduke? Is it Ed Miliband? I don't know. You know, you decide. You know. Still, I'll consider taking a political career. You know, if there's a sufficient demand, I feel yes, but only if we can actually bring on board Jessica Ward and William Sitwell as being sort of the main cabinet leaders on the whole system.
Aww, too kind.
Right, I'll be your minister for food.
Yes.
But I've already distracted you. No, what's exciting about the Northampton Food and Drink Awards is that year after year, the categories get bigger, there's more and more entries, and, you know, food culture really starts with small producers appealing to local customers who have a proper direct relationship with the people who grow their food. And the categories tonight, which have bread, cheese, ales, all these simple things that are nonetheless magnificent, and that's where it starts. We have amazing new goat's cheeses. I think we have about 8 goat's cheeses now in Northamptonshire. You know, I mean, you wouldn't have thought that a few years ago. And there's lots of little breweries. You mentioned some of those on the shortlist today. They've got some smaller cider makers. We're not so far from Lincolnshire, and we're trying to, you know, make a bit of noise about the food and drink that we have in our county, and it's very exciting.
And so you should, when we've got for new local product of the year, sponsored by Whitford Brothers, Clicker's Goat Cheese, Cobbler's Nibble, the incredible Onion and Seeds Loaf, the Marathon Maker Muffin, and the Spicy Heart Buffin.
A buffin is a mixture between a muffin and a bun.
Oh.
And they call it a buffin.
Sort of a buffin, the vampire slayer, really, if it's done even.
They make a buffin using 3C cider, which I think they should call a cuffin. They're not having any of it.
Well, if they're listening to this, maybe they'll realise the error of their ways, William. That's all we can actually say. So in terms of the... I mean, clearly there's a lot of competition that works through this, but it's the Carlsberg UK Northamptonshire Food and Drink Awards 2014. Is it a black tie event?
It is. It's a black tie function. Mm. I'm amazed that, you know, you won't be lingering outside trying to jump in there in your smart tuxedo yourself.
Had we but known, William, I mean, I tell you what we might well do is do some follow-ups with respect to the winners, because I think that would be quite fun, actually, to sort of give them an additional
idea.
Bonus on that side of it. Anyway, Jessica, over to yourself. Questions or thoughts on the Northamptonshire Food and Drink Festival or anything else you'd like to share with William?
The ales sound amazing. The ciders and ales sound amazing. Have you tried all of them yet? Have you had a...
Yeah, I was a judge, so...
Of course, then,
A merry afternoon in Carlsberg HQ in Northampton, sipping our way through all those ciders.
Of course, you see, this is the crucial thing.
Exciting.
Being a judge, he knows who's won, but we
can't
swear exactly that the envelope is there. Oh. It will be revealed.
Exactly.
I presume people can go to the northamptonshirefoodanddrink.co.uk website to actually find out the winners tomorrow morning.
I think you're right to assume that. No doubt, maybe the server will stall and crash with the monumental weight of people logging on.
Already, we were speaking with Bill Cowling, the show director for Countryside Live, and I think actually, Bill, what he was sort of saying, because we've got good news, I'll share it one more time, that next Thursday you won't be speaking to Jessica Ward, William. I know that might sort of say, what? That's a tragedy, that's not good news at all. But we've got actually double good news, because Katie Grimmison starts her paid job in the jewellery sector in Birmingham, doing some search engine optimization stuff. So good news for Katie, she's out there getting money and all the rest of bits and pieces. But Jessica, share with William why we should be very proud of what you're going to be doing next Thursday at St James's Palace.
I'm going to collect my Gold Duke of Edinburgh Award.
Yeah.
In London.
Ah, amazing. Fantastic. I read about the Duke of Edinburgh Awards, you hear about it. I've never met someone who's been part of it yet, let alone a winner. To have you, your voice, live on the end of this line, that's brilliant. No, very exciting, and all I can say is I hope you behave, and I hope you don't tweet from the loo.
Yes, well, as tempting as that is.
Exactly, it would just set the scene, New Zealand, Isle of Man citizen, and all sorts of that. Who knows what could happen there, outrageous. William, fabulous as ever. Again, a reminder, it's the northamptonshirefoodanddrink.co.uk website to go to. Are you currently on the road, or are you just outside the office with respect to cars passing by?
Well, I'm standing in the sunshine by my office, and overhead roars the A40 Westway.
Right.
I like to think it sounds like gently crashing waves onto the distant shores of some beach in the Atlantic Ocean. But no, it's the A40 flyover in West London.
Yeah. Well, as we just heard this morning, actually, greenhouse effect. What greenhouse effect? It's just not happening, so just carry on. As long as you have catalytic converters, all's well with the world. Meanwhile...
Yes, well, all's well in the world if you're Owen Paterson. I think if anyone who's not Owen Paterson isn't so optimistic.
Yeah, and don't get me started on the recent sort of ramifications and musings of a certain Lord Freud, but that's another issue entirely, which we won't go into for clear reasons. Would you like to actually ask those last two questions in your own inimitable way to William Sitwell, please? Jessica?
Yes. William, have you enjoyed this morning's show?
Very much so. It's always a great pleasure to speak to your guest host, the leader of the opposition, so fantastic.
And will we be hearing from you soon?
I hope so.
Oh, great.
There we are, yeah, exactly. So William Sitwell will return. Yay!
Hello, yeah, it's been a while. Not much. How about you? Not sure why I called. I guess I really just wanted to talk to you. It's a warm wind blowing, the stars around, and I'd really love to see you tonight. I'm not talking about moving in, and I don't want to change your...
Oh, I just have a little line from Richard Edwards, editor-in-chief of SFX magazine, who said he never actually arranged an interview live on air before. There we are, it's all nice there. So all great material in terms of SFX magazine and Annette Andre, which, of course, if you want to listen to what Annette was talking about on the show yesterday, you could actually go to our show page on sirenonline.co.uk and access southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com, and you'll be able to access all of those, well, now, actually, because they all went up earlier this morning. Right, Alan Stevens will be talking about his views on Doctor Who in a few moments, primarily because we had thought we might have given a second chance to the pioneer of the air piano, but tragically we've only managed to get through to the air answer phone. That's okay. We've got, obviously, CaldorCity.com's very own Alan Stevens, writer, producer and presenter. He'll be talking about the current series of Doctor Who and what he's made of it so far.
Cross my dreams with nets of wonder, I chase the bright elusive butterfly of love.
Splendid. Bob Lind, who actually wrote Elusive Butterfly there. Siren 107.3 FM, the Midweek Drive Morning Edition is what you're listening to. It's just coming around to 29 minutes past 9 a.m. Ooh, then what's time? It's just an illusion. Who would actually help with that? Well, the Doctor might, being a Time Lord. And if we can't get the Time Lord himself, we can go for writer, producer and Doctor Who scholar Alan Stevens. Isn't that right, Alan?
Hello, yes.
Yeah. So, Alan, I think you've spoken to Jessica before, have you? Jessica, have you spoken to Alan Stevens before?
No.
It's
First time.
Well, there we
Very
are.
Exciting.
Exactly, Jessica. I'll say it one more time because it deserves mentioning. Just triumphant this morning, actually, Alan, because Jessica, her netball side won 42-7, beating the University of Staffordshire. 42 points to 7. 42-7. Mm-hmm. And.
That's a rout.
Yeah. And next week she's going down to St James's Palace to pick up her Duke of Edinburgh Gold Award.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, so you can see we've moved a much better standard of co-presenter into place, really.
Yeah, obviously, we're going up and away.
Precisely. And, of course, Jessica, you were asking, who's the actress who plays Clara Osmond in Doctor Who? Of course,
yes.
Jenna Coleman, exactly. And you've been sort of following the Peter Capaldi series, have you?
Yes. My flatmates have insisted that I watch it properly now, because I haven't watched, obviously, the previous ones. Mm. And I'm finding it very, very enjoyable. I actually really like the acting and just the whole show is just great.
There we are, you see. Mm. Peer pressure from flatmates, Alan,
can
suddenly introduce a whole new world of Doctor Who to the New Zealand citizens of the Isle of Man who are reading journalism at the University of Lincoln. Amazing.
Well, that's quite a backstory.
And Fiona Moore, welcome.
No, I just did a very good impression.
Yes. Dr. Fiona Moore, of course, from Royal Holloway College London, also online. Fantastic. Of course, one of the key folk behind what we're gradually looking to develop on May the 6th next year, which is, of course, a Telefantasy and Society conference. And Fiona is from Canada. So I feel New Zealand and Canada, it's like a meeting of the Commonwealth here. It's fantastic.
Yeah, all around the world.
Quite literally. Yeah. Anyway, how are you this morning, Fiona?
Well, pretty good. How are you?
Well, very good. And we haven't asked for quite some time, before we get into the nitty-gritty of this conversation, in terms of what did you make of an episode that Paul Money, our local astronomer, and indeed editor of Focus magazine, said he just couldn't take it, he thought the science was dreadful, it was worse, etc. You know, the moon is an egg, it's not going to happen, it's a disaster. I did actually offset Space 1999 within that, and just, he wasn't having that at all.
He
thought, dreadful situation. But, you know, and we've got, of course, the Orient Express to work through as well. We just need to acknowledge the sort of fact that times change. That's all I have to say. Times change. Anyway, that continues. So, Jessica, do you want to start this thing before we actually sort of find out the views of Alan and Fiona in terms of the whole sort of thing itself? What those are actually made of it? Any particular episodes that stand out for yourself, Jessica?
Oh, good question. I found the egg one very interesting, the moon being an egg. Mm. Very creative. Mm.
Creative but scientifically completely inaccurate.
No, it was really good. I don't know what the creature was called, the one in the school. I found that quite a thriller. I can't remember, I don't know.
What was it now? It was like the blister or something or whatever, wasn't it?
I think so.
The robot thing, I can't remember.
Yes, the robot thing.
It was like something from the 90s, though, wasn't it? It was a bit kind of like strange, that.
Yes, but I enjoyed it.
It was really good. Yeah, no, I enjoyed that one as well, actually, yeah.
That was fun.
And Fiona, when we spoke to you last, of course, you were a little bit concerned that the role of Clara was, it could go too far, it could suddenly go, it could fold back into all sorts of... Has that been handled successfully, that little miniature story arc with her falling out with the Doctor, getting a bit annoyed, taking advice, wondering should you pack it all in, slamming the doors, etc.?
Well, it still hasn't finished yet, really. Mm. So, you know, can't really comment on that particular storyline till it's done. I mean, I don't... you know, the way it's been going so far, you know, I can believe it, you know. It's I know some people had a you know, problem with it, but to be honest, I think her actions last episode were all pretty consistent. So you know, I'm just going to be interested to see where it all goes, really.
Yeah.
So there we are. So where do you want to start, Alan? Mummy on the Orient Express, or indeed
We covered the school one last time I spoke, didn't I?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. So it's that Kill the Moon.
Kill the Moon.
The idea appeared to have been based on a story, short story by a guy called Nelson Bond called Unload the Bird, which is about this sort of giant bird thing that was flying around the solar system and eventually alighted on Venus, which then hatched out and a chick came out of it. And I think it's released in a 1977 anthology book. But anyway, so that's where the idea is ripped from. But the writer then had to justify you know, them going to the moon and all this stuff. And he did it by actually referring to real science, but very, very badly. I think fantasy, if you, for example, in Mummy on the Orient Express, you've got a train flying through space, you say, ah, well, yes, of course, you know, this is modelled on the original one, but it's a bit bigger, and instead of railway lines, it's timelines or whatever. Then you can get away with that because you haven't actually explained it. You say you're way, way into the future, you know, that there's this idea, isn't it, that science can become so advanced that eventually it resembles magic. And that's fair enough. But if you refer to real science and then just get it wrong, then everyone's watching it and thinking, well, I know that's ridiculous. And as an egg, you know, just states it doesn't actually get heavier. And it just, you know, the science was so bad that it kind of eventually pulls your head of it. So although the music was nice and generally the performances were nice and the directing was good and the spider things were good, the science is just so awful that
I'd add to that and say that it's not even just that the science is bad. It's also that, you know, from a personal point of view, I just didn't find, you know, the story good enough to get past the bad science. I mean, you said Space 1999 earlier, and again, season one especially can be a good example of times where you get presented with some absolutely ludicrous stuff, and yet you forgive it because the characters the reactions are so believable and the story is so intriguing that you're just sort of like, okay, I'm going to forgive them two brains, Jim. I just want to know how they get out of this, you know. So as I said, the science hit my suspension of disbelief, and then it didn't provide me with anything to sort of make me go, okay, well, that doesn't really matter so much.
Also, it didn't really make a lot of sense why they were there in the first place, because later when he says, you know, if we blow up the moon and kill the bird thing, will asteroids strike the Earth and you know, destroy it? Because, you know, they were saying that the asteroid that killed the dinosaurs, this would be fragments of his eggshell striking the Earth would be, 10,000 times worse. I mean, effectively, that would, you know, obliterate life on the Earth. But you've got to think to yourself, well, if blowing up the moon is a danger to the Earth, then were they there in the first place with 100 nuclear bombs? It wasn't just, you know, science. It was actually the plot logic.
It was the logistics, too.
Yeah.
The fact that only one of the astronauts knows how to blow up the bombs. Okay, well, you know, if she happens to be the one...
gets killed in the crash landing.
...freak accident, then the other two are screwed. You know, why not just quickly teach the other two how to do it? That way you've got redundancy built in.
And then we have this sort of moral idea that, you know, the doctor, well, I cannot interfere in this because this is a hinge point or whatever, you know, and it's got to be humans who make this decision, and therefore I'm going. Well, first of all, he's the one who, you know, if that's true, then it should just be the astronaut who makes the decision. It shouldn't be Clara and Courtney there. I mean, he has effectively put them there. And equally, if you work back how he works with, you know, Clara in Deep Breath said, I am, I'm scared to death, but I know the doctor. I have faith in the doctor that he will rescue me. In fact, she reached out her hand, and there he is. If she believes that the doctor will rescue her, then it's not really a case of whether the space chicken should survive or Earth should, you know, vote. It's a case of how long do I wait until the doctor turns up? And so the fact is, you know, 2 seconds before the nuclear device detonates, she presses the abort, and the doctor shows. So again, you know, the doctor effectively is using Clara to change the events. It's her faith in him that's being judged, not this. Was he lying? Was it a complete, a fiction? Was it a? I don't think the writer entirely knew. I think on the surface it was meant to be, you know, people making a moral decision about saving the space chicken and taking a leap in the dark, or you know, damaging the Earth. But I think ultimately, you know, if they believe that huge fragments of this moon is going to destroy the Earth, then there is no moral debate. The space chicken has got to be oven or fried or whatever, you know. So I didn't really buy the moral dilemma at all. I just didn't, you know, think the story was right. And also, wasn't there something about the spiders as well? Weren't they so singular organ?
That was what really hit me in the disbelief area. I can believe creepy spiders. You know, I like creepy spiders. I like monster movies. So I was prepared to love the creepy spiders. But then when he said they were a unicellular organism, you know, something that complex is not unicellular. I'm sorry. And why not just have them be creepy spiders? Why do they have to be? They have to be this ridiculous idea they're bacteria. Why not just have them be parasites on the egg creature?
And finally, I think that when the doctor says something, I mean, if something appears weird, I mean, we don't know who Missy is, and we don't know whether they're, you know, in some sort of. I mean, one of the ways the Space 1999 got away with it, or in season one anyway, was the possibility that, you know, A, the moon was being projected into the universe, and the universe is some kind of living brain. And the other idea was the moon actually had been destroyed and they were all dead, and it was some kind of, like, you know, afterlife sort of journey to, you know, purgatory sort of whatever. But so if you've got the idea here that the Doctor is eventually revealed that he's inside the Matrix or, you know, the land of fiction or something, then possibly you can cover some of this stuff. But if the Doctor himself is, you know, saying stuff which is clearly wrong, then unless he's being, you know, he's been manipulated from some outside course, then he's basically spouting rubbish science. And the message of the story isn't that, you know, what he's saying to Clara is you can't rely on anything. You know, any science you think is true is wrong. Anything, any reality, you cannot understand the universe because it's so big. You can only understand it through me. So it's like, you know, either you put up with all the rubbish science, you know, or you stop watching the show. And I kind of think that's a, you know, that's a kind of almost megalomaniac style message, isn't it, really?
Okay,
you know, if you don't like it,
I'm sensing kind of sort of negative. But, I mean, did you get the same level of passion with your flatmates, Jessica, when you sort of caught the episode yourself, or did you sort of think, no, I thought it was good, or what were your thoughts on the whole thing?
Kill the Moon, yeah. Mm. We kind of thought it was a bit of a weird storyline, and that obviously it's not real, but...
I don't know.
Well, yeah.
No, it ain't real.
If we're going to go down that tracker. But, yeah, we thought the whole idea was a bit strange, but, I think it was just entertainment, so...
Yeah, well, I mean, I would certainly say that it was entertaining. You know, I wasn't bored by it. It's just that when you have a fridge moment afterwards and think, what was that about? You think, actually, how can a chicken lay an egg?
Sort of,
it's bigger than the chicken. I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
Okay.
And if you want to look at continuity terms, originally the idea of the Silurians, I think this is actually mentioned in a recent, you know, a Matt Smith story as well, the Silurians went into underground bunkers because the moon had been, a rogue asteroid came into their atmosphere, and they thought, oh my goodness, it's going to tear the atmosphere away. We'll build these bunkers. You can see the damn thing coming. And yet here it's implied that, you know, the space chicken just lays an egg, and it you know, without causing any, not a ripple on, you know, it'll disappear, and that's okay, and that's obviously happened before. Every 10,000 years or 10 billion years or whatever it is, a space chicken comes along, lays an egg, or, you know, or hatches, lays another egg, and flies off. And so that's kind of, if you're a Doctor Who fan, that's kind of sort of thing, hang on a second, what about this rogue asteroid and the Silurians and stuff? So, you know, if you want to be really kind of like hardcore Doctor Who, that's going to annoy your
Doctor Who. So, let's cut to the quick marks out of 10, Fiona, for Kill the Moon.
Why do you always ask me this? Because you know perfectly well that I'm going to answer that I don't like quantitative.
I know that. That's exactly so. Exactly. That's right. We talk about numbers the same. May the 6th, 26th, 2015. That's when we'll have, hopefully, Telefantasy and Society at the University of Lincoln. But anyway, what grading would you give it? Is it an upper second, Fiona? Is it a first?
I might pass it, but I would put a severe warning on it to study really hard.
We're talking 42%.
No plagiarism thing, then.
No, exactly.
No plagiarism, though.
I wouldn't give it plagiarism, but no. I would. I might give it a 48 and warn it to make sure to stop quoting received wisdom when it's actually in the exams session.
There we are. Okay, Alan?
Well... Mm-hmm. To be fair,
66 seconds.
I like the music,
yeah.
And I give it 3 out of 10.
Okay, and Jessica?
Oh no.
As in 10 being very good, 1 being.
I'd probably give it maybe a 4.5.
4.5. Okay, as you said, 66 seconds before the mummy comes down to sort us out on the Orient Express. What about that one, Alan? Mummy on the Orient Express.
This was completely reverse of that story. I mean, I was getting a bit. I didn't actually watch it when it went out because we were having a party at the time, and also I was a bit depressed by the quality of the previous one. And I thought, because I mean, recently I'd watched 3 episodes of Boardwalk Empire in a line, and if you do that, you get a far more you understand it a bit better than watching one every week. Because it's a bit like it's one of those box set scenes you put down and you watch whoosh, you know. And if you watch it one episode per week, and then you have after the first season, you have a 6-month gap, and you come back in, you start thinking, hang on, I've got to need a scorecard here. Who's this character again, and where did he come from, and what was his history, and what are they referring to? So I was thinking to myself, perhaps I'll just watch it all in one big splurge, and, you know, instead of, you know, watching these bits and pieces episodes and getting annoyed. But then I realised, you know, that then I decided I was going to speak to you, and I thought, oh, hang on, that means I've actually got to watch it. So I watched it yesterday, with not much hope, to be honest, and thought it was excellent. I thought it was really, really good. It all fitted together. The performances, on the whole, were excellent. Visuals
even
were good.
Frank Skinner? Did you enjoy
Frank? No, Frank Skinner was awful.
He was the one exception, yes.
No, Frank Skinner, everyone in it was excellent, except Frank Skinner. Now, I'm not in any way saying that Frank Skinner is a lovely guy. I've met him. You know, I think he's a funny bloke. I've known him for, you know, I've seen him for, you know, I've been a follower of him, as it were, for years. Yeah. But he can act. And the final scene where he's talking to the Doctor, a bit of TARDIS, and whether he's going to stay on, his performance was so bad, I thought it was some kind of indication to me that he was, in fact, Gus. He was going to say, yes, but you were Gus, because he just sounded completely phony. And I thought, is this, you know, well, perhaps he's sort of implying that, you know, what he's saying to you isn't... But it wasn't. It was actually just terrible acting.
It was Frank Skinner as Casey Jones, surely.
And, yeah, well, it was Frank Skinner as Casey Jones, but on the one hand, I thought, why is Frank Skinner's character here at all? And perhaps if he'd been played... It was just so distracting. I mean, we all know Frank Skinner, and Frank Skinner can't act. So the combination of that, it was so distracting. Every time I saw it, it sort of pulled you away. And every line, even one line, he would say, would be awful, which was... terrible, because really the rest of the performance...
So I take it, Alan, you're not likely to be asking Frank to perform in one of the upcoming audio plays and dramas that you're working through.
No, I'm sorry, Frank. No, I would. So. Or I would just get him... I mean, you can get a performance out of someone who can't act by simply writing it to them and then rehearsing them until eventually, you know, they get it. But I don't think they had the time to do that, and I don't think it was written specifically for Skinner. I just...
Okay.
You know, It just sort of like the character sort of self-destructed. So no, that was a huge.
So that's a downer. Okay, Jessica.
Yeah. The music as well. I wasn't so keen. I thought the incidental music was intrusive, but everything else I thought was brilliant. I thought the script was excellent.
And Jessica, Mummy on the Orient Express.
I actually quite liked that one. Mm. I found the whole concept really interesting, and it was actually kind of scary at times. I admit, but yeah, no, I enjoyed that one, but. Am I rating it?
I go on, yes.
I'd probably give it a 6.
Over to you yourself, Fiona, then.
Well, yeah, I like the look. I like the general feel. I thought that the, you know, thematically it was consistent. Initially,
yeah.
I was a little put off by the kind of Orient Express thing. I was thinking, oh, God, it's Voyage of the Damned with monkeys. The thing was that... Yeah, when you actually sit down and think about it, it makes sense. Because if somebody's manipulating the situation, then, you know, a mummy on the Orient Express is not so coincidental. And also, again, you know, the way the Doctor was playing it, kind of having to,
be callous.
Basically.
Because he's being observed.
Yeah, be callous do the whole thing, and then, you know, at the end of it actually kind of give some idea of, you know, the actual conflicted feelings he was having, and then kind of drawing Clara into the, you know, the deception, as it were, you know, because it made it clear that Clara herself was prepared to lie and possibly even send somebody to their death, as far as she thought she knew, you know, just, you know...
Needs must, Fiona. Sometimes you have to cope with that.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, is it? Because at the very end, when she's talking to her boyfriend, Danny Pink, she then says, well, Doctor, it was his idea in the first place I should leave you, which was a lie, and now he's changed his mind and think I should stay with you, which is a lie. And so effectively it's changed from, you know, saving someone from, you know, someone who's going to die and making something up so they feel better or aren't terrified, to actually, you know, blatantly lying. So it's a slippery slope that she's, you know, slid down very, very quickly. So, I mean, I think there was good character development there. I think they've attempted this season to give Clara, you know, more to do than the sort of info dump plot machine she was last season. You know, she is a good actress. I didn't even recognise her when she came out of the TARDIS at first, wearing that the hair and the beautiful eye makeup. Oh, who's that? She's got a new girl. I mean, she is a very, very attractive and talented actress. I think that Capaldi is, you know, brilliant. He's got enormous energy, and there's lines he said which were fantastic. And there were some great lines. There's one line where she says, "I went to a concert. I can't remember what it was now. Someone else said this thing or whatever. But you know, do you know what they said?" And he went, "Quite frankly, no. How could I possibly know who that person is?" And so there's some great little bits and pieces in there in character. You know, I just thought it was written by... I mean, I've never seen this guy who wrote it. He'd worked on or devised a series called Being Human.
Yeah, he'd worked on it. The guy who devised it was Toby Whitehouse.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't ever even watch the show, but, you know, I get the impression, and this is not a good thing, that sometimes Russell T. Davies used to do it, and I sometimes get the impression that, and John Avon Turner used to do it as well, and that was much to everyone's irritation, but I think that probably Moffat might be doing it as well, where they say, right, I want a story, Orient Express, a mummy, countdown. All right, go away and write that. And some people just can't, and it doesn't work together.
And some people do. So very quickly, because Jessica, you've given it a 6. Alan, your marks for A Mummy on the Orient Express?
8.
8. And Fiona?
Yeah, about that.
There you are. Fantastic. It's been brilliant. We started off considering the work of Hugh Grant, and we finished with Peter Capaldi, after which, of course, we've also featured Ian Lennox, Bill Cowling, show director for Countryside Live, William Sitwell on the North Ants Food and Farming Festival, and a whole heap of other things. Last two questions for Alan and Fiona. Please, Jessica.
Have you guys enjoyed this morning's show?
Oh, as always, yes.
Yes, good.
Mm-hmm. And will we be hearing from you in the near future?
Yes, sure.
Because we need to find out what Ayesha and Zhukov,
Ayesha.
Ayesha, exactly, are sort of doing. They'll catch
all
sorts of
things. At the moment, she's on the dining room table licking her lips.
You see, that's the kind of interest that's coming through in all sorts of ways. Jessica, we'll see you.
That's a cat, by the way, not our daughter or anything.
Countryside Life. Exactly. For the map, remember, caldorcity.com is the go-to place for all sorts of other things, Magic Bullet Productions and so on. Alan and Fiona, we salute you. Take care. We'll speak soon.
See you soon, then.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.